Hey listeners, my fabulous colleagues Amy Bernstein and Amy Gallo are back with a new season of Women at Work. You know, it's your guide to whatever you're facing at work, from anxiety to Gen AI. Listen to new episodes of Women at Work every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the HBR IdeaCast from Harvard Business Review. I'm Kurt Nikisch. To say the last year has changed us would be an understatement. The pandemic forced many people to work and manage much more remotely and differently. Now, as a growing number of places return to more in-person work, it's a good time to explore the issues that organizations and managers face as they reset and reorganize their working lives. Throughout the next few months, HBR IdeaCast will look at these challenges, and today we're starting with implementing hybrid work across an organization. That's a mix of remote work and on-site activity. Our guest today has studied remote work for nearly 20 years, and he's here to explain how leaders can think through hybrid work arrangements so that they're fair to employees and effective for the organization, and not just short term. Nicholas Bloom is a professor of economics at Stanford University and the author of the HBR article, Don't Let Employees Pick Their Work From Home Days. Nick, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Kurt, lovely to be here. Thanks.
So I have a lot of nitty-gritty questions for you about this, but just to get us going here, why is it important for managers and leaders to have a strategy in place when it comes to work from home and hybrid work? Like, why can't you just kind of figure it out as you go along?
Ooh, that's in a sense the easy question. Firms and, you know, CEOs in particular, CHRs, are under enormous pressure right now to tell their employees what they're going to do in future, because these employees need to plan their lives around this. What most firms have decided is to go for hybrid. The typical plan will be something like 3 days in the office, two at home. So huge numbers of firms have announced this, you know, Google, Microsoft, Apple, Citibank, HSBC, blah, blah, blah. Around 70 to 80% of firms are going to hybrid. The other 20 to 30% have mostly not decided. So why is that? The reason is, hybrid represents a great trade-off between the benefits of being in person, which is better innovation, typically better kind of creativity and the ability to build office culture, versus the benefits of not having to go into the office, which enables you to work quietly at home and avoid, you know, the painful commute. It looks like from the research, firms are going to be about 5% more productive doing that, and employees on average are significantly happier.
Nick, in a recent HBR article, you argued that workers shouldn't all get to choose what days they have off. Why is prescribing the days in and out of the office a good policy?
Choices may be the most controversial and, you know, the most difficult issue, I think, for managers I talk to right now. So the issue is, imagine you as in, you know, the huge majority of firms have decided you're going to do hybrid post-pandemic. Now the question is how to execute the scheme, and in particular, who gets to choose which days of the week they work from home, and also how many days do they get to work from home? So at one extreme is like full decentralization. Every employee gets to choose which days and how many days. So if you want to work from home 4 days a week and only come in on Wednesdays, you can. If you, you know, want to work from home 0 days a week, you can. So that's one extreme. The middle position, I think, is team by team. So as a corporation, you say, each team manager decides, and he or she kind of basically polls the people in their team, maybe polls other teams that they want to work closely with and makes the decision. And then the final choice is fully centralized, which is the CEO, CHR, you know, basically the people running the company, they decide and they tell each team, you will work from home on these days. And importantly, you will not work from home on these other days. So, for example, take Apple. Apple has announced you're going to come in Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, work from home Wednesday, Friday. What that means is Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, you have all of your in-person meetings, big events, training sessions, leaving events, lunches, etc. It was like three exhaustingly social days. And then Wednesday, Friday, you leave report writing, reading, presentations, you know, emails. And I have to say, in survey data I've seen, and from talking to companies, firms are pretty equally split between those three different positions.
And you recommend the harder prescription, right?
Yeah, so my views have also changed to start off with. So the fully decentralized, the full choice version was what I was actually suggesting a year ago. And the justification for this is there is a huge variation in what employees want. So if we look at survey data, around 20% of employees never want to work from home. They want to come in 5 days a week. They tend to be young singles or, you know, empty nesters. And they're frankly fed up of working at home and they find it isolating. At the other extreme, 30% of people never want to come into work again. They tend to be, you know, middle-aged with, you know, kids and family. They live far away or it's expensive to commute. And then the remaining 50% want anything between 1 to 4 days a week. So given this huge variety, why not let people choose? And in fact, one very senior manager I spoke to kind of perfectly, encapsulate this when she said, look, for my team, I have great performance metrics and I've told them I'm going to treat you like adults. You know, America's a free country. If you perform your job well, you can choose which days and how many days you come in. And it's up to you. Of course, if you don't perform your job, I'm going to, you know, get serious with you and maybe haul you back into the office. But as long as you are performing, it's entirely your choice. That's the defense for the full choice model. My view has changed because I see three problems with the full choice model.
Can I guess that one problem with this is that if it's a complete mix of people every day with who's in and who's out, then some people start to think, what's the point of coming in if other people that I need to work with today are remote anyway? I might as well just stay home.
Yes, exactly. So one issue is what I'd call the, you know, the challenges of mixed mode. Mixed mode is the name that's been given when some are in the office and some are at home. Turns out that really doesn't work that well. So imagine trying to take, you know, a Zoom or a Teams call with six people, of which three are in the office, three at home. You can imagine what happens. The three in the office all get in a conference room. They're like three small heads in one screen. The other three are big heads on the other three screens. You know, A, you can't really see their expressions. And even worse, you can see the, you know, there's whispering.
Some companies try to solve this by making everybody join remotely, even when they're at the office.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the next step along this evolution is the, is right.
So let's make this equitable. We're all talking to each other over a screen, even though we're next to each other.
Exactly. And so a lot of firms are going to set up these cubicles. You know, I hear the soundproofing issues that, you know, people shout. They try their best. The problem with having people join on their laptops in the office is, A, as you said, you know, why come in the first place? And B, more seriously, any controversial meeting, you know exactly what's going to happen if you're one of the three from home. As soon as the meeting ends, the three folks in the office close their laptops, walk out of the cubicle and talk to each other, probably go grab a coffee. So you cannot escape really this in-group, out-group without some kind of Orwellian setup. Some managers said, well, we're just going to ban employees after meetings from talking about it. It's like, can you imagine how you implement that? You know, that's like the secret police. So mixed mode is honestly really problematic and you can have better or worse mixed mode, but, you know, even the best execution runs into problems.
What other downsides are there to letting workers choose when to work from home?
Imagine people were asked, if you get to work from home 2 days a week, which 2 days would you think they typically choose to work from home?
Monday and Friday, so they have long weekends.
Yes, exactly. So in the survey data, what we find is we asked, we've done this two waves, we've asked 10,000 people, so that's pretty good data at this point, which days you would choose. And you find that only 18% of people choose Wednesday and 64% choose Friday. So if you reverse that around, you can see the problem. So if you think about how many people are going to come in, 82% of your employees are going to come in on a Wednesday. And you're only going to have 36% come in on a Friday. What that means is if you have enough desks and office space to fully accommodate everyone on Wednesday, more than half of that's empty on a Friday and a Monday. So Wednesday's crammed, people are uncomfortable, there's packed elevators, kitchens, doorways, people are, you know, post-COVID, people are very nervous about, you know, dense congestion. Monday, Friday in particular, it's like tumbleweed blowing down the office.
You also wrote in your article about a diversity crisis. Explain that.
Yes. So the third point was something that, to be honest, came up looking at the data and talking to managers. So there are two facts you need to know. Fact one is who chooses to come into the office and how many days is not random. So, for example, in our surveys, we found that if you look at college graduates, so that's just over half the labor force folks with like one plus year of college, and you look at college grads with young kids, so kids under the age of 12, you see women are almost 50% more likely to want to work from home 5 days a week than men. It's also the case if you look at people who are disabled, who live far from the office, who are lower income, so can't afford a car. These groups have a higher preference to work from home more days than other groups. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's completely, you know, as you'd expect, and it makes a lot of sense. But it's just to say that the choice, if left open, is not going to be random. Fact two, that where, you know, this causes the problem is if you have teams where some people are working from home and others are coming in the office, those working from home face a very large promotion penalty. So to give you a number on that, I did a big randomized control trial on working from home in China back in, you know, from 2010 to 2015. And what you found is people that work from home, their promotion rates were 50% of those that were coming in every day. So that is an enormous effect. And, you know, you can see why. They're not around, they're getting forgotten about, maybe they're not developing managerial skills, etc. So if you put that together, you can see if you allow choice, you could easily find a situation 5-10 years from now whereby young single men will get promoted up the firm, you know, married people with young kids, particularly women, disabled people, people living further away, don't come in and, you know, they fall behind. And there's both a diversity and a huge legal issue around that.
All right, so I'm a manager and I've decided to have a bit more structure when it comes to who works from home and when. How do I approach that decision? How do I decide that in an equitable way and communicate it and have it be an effective policy? What do you recommend?
I think there are really two choices that I would advise. One is the team-based and one is the company-based. And it depends what matters to firms. So you can say, look, as a company, we would like some choice, but not complete choice. So we're going to allow each team to decide it. Within the team, you've all got to come in on those days and all stay at home on the same days. And you may want to say, look, we advise teams to have 3 days in the office and 2 working from home. If you set it up at a team level, you immediately address the mixed mode problem for most meetings, because most meetings, you know, at least if companies are set up on a team or a project basis or within team, within project, it's not perfect, but you deal with most of it. And you address most of the diversity concerns, because promotions are normally considered against other folks in your team. That's often the benchmark. You obviously don't address the office use question. So at the team level, you know, you give more choice, but you're going to have an inefficient use of office, because most teams you're going to discover are going to choose at least one of, if not both, Monday, Friday to work from home. The other version is just to centralize it. And coming back to the discussion earlier, is say, we're going to start off centralizing it and we're going to see how it plays out. Deciding upon hybrid now and announcing it is a very good idea. And that's what a huge number of companies have done. But announcing the full set of all the details and precisely how this will work is probably not best done now, because it's hard to predict and it's going to change. And if you notice in the press, most companies have not announced the details precisely for this reason.
There are also some people who have to come in more because of the nature of their work. When you have that variation, you are going to have differences, and that can breed some issues of resentment and perceptions of unfairness. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so, you know, multiple managers have said to me, you know, roughly half or a third or two thirds of our employees can work from home. They're very happy with this hybrid plan. The other one third or half, whatever it is, can't. And they're feeling angry. They've said that, you know, they've had the whole pandemic having to come in every day. Some of them have faced infection risk, been infected, in fact, and now they're not going to get this nice perk post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. First thing is, it is a genuine issue. It is a real issue. There's, you know, there's no getting around it. In, just to give you, put numbers on it, in our survey, people report that working from home 2 days a week is equivalent to something like a 6% pay increase. They've, you know, they report it's a pretty valuable thing to have, and you can imagine why. You know, the types of solutions, you know, one basic solution is obviously, you know, this has been discussed a fair bit, is having some kind of, you know, make good pay bonus yearly for those that can't work from home. Say, for example, you say, for anyone that is not able to work from home, is coming in 5 days a week, we're going to give you a 5% pay top up in reflection of the fact that, you know, you're not getting this benefit. That's mostly going to go to lower income individuals. If you look in the data, that's slightly more likely to go to women. It's slightly more likely to go to minorities because they're the kinds of roles we see in the data they hold. It tends to be slightly harder to have these working from home. So that's definitely one policy that is on the table.
I imagine that some companies are in a little bit of a pickle there too, because they've also hired people who are remote first. Now you may have to merge that, or you have that same resentment from other people who say, well, now, you know, these people were hired and they get to stay remote. And meanwhile, like, I have to come in 3 days a week.
What I've been hearing a lot from various companies is, particularly actually tech firms during the pandemic, because they've hired so aggressively, they have now way more headcount than they can ever fit in their headquarters. They also, as you say, have a number of employees that have been hired and never been into the office. So I think the way this is going to shake out, there are some kind of guidelines on this. I personally would advise against having teams where some people are fully remote and others are coming in 3 days a week because of the promotion cost and the disruption. So if you had a team of, say, six people and you hired a seventh person fully remote in the pandemic, I would probably make them come in. And if they are extremely resistant to coming in, you know, you face a devil's dilemma of, do you basically, you know, move them, ask them to come in or quit? I'm not sure. I personally would not have a team where one person is remote and feeling resentful, doesn't get promoted for, you know, for 3-4 years, because I just don't think that's a healthy situation. So for teams where I would try and unify at the team level, and that may well mean some people quit and some turnover, I think that's unavoidable. Then, as you say, there are other teams where they've mostly been staffed up remote. And for those teams, companies may take the view, look, if I have a team of 8 people and they're all basically remote and they've been hired remote, sure, it may be better to have had them, you know, all else equal hybrid, come in 3 days a week, but most of them are going to quit rather than do that. And I'd probably rather the team working remotely at, you know, 90% efficiency than 2/3 of them quit and try and get the other 1/3 in. So I think there's going to be a lot of legacy effects.
It's definitely an interesting business problem, right? Organizations have made some short-term decisions to really see themselves through a crisis and then, you know, accelerate out of the crisis. And now you have this problem of trying to integrate that into kind of a more sustainable way, but also not lose the advantages that you've clawed towards yourself short-term.
Yes. You know, another thing just from watching this since the beginning of the pandemic is, suddenly entering, you know, spring and particularly summer of 2021, the jobs market is completely heated up, and now it's the war for talent is back on. And that has turbocharged the remote work discussion, because you see in the data what firms want is typically 1 to 2 days a week remote work on average. What employees want is typically 2 to 3, as in at least a day to a day and a half more. And employees are, you know, getting their way more and more because, you know, you're desperate to hire. And this is meaning the number of days a week remote work is drifting up, because it's, you know, often when I talk to companies, they're saying, look, we wanted to have people work from home 1 day a week. We realized we'd never managed to hire or retain anyone. So we've moved to 2, or we wanted 2, we've moved to 3. You know, the pandemic is having an effect actually through the rapid recovery, forcing remote work really as a perk and a way to retain employees.
Let's talk about the timing of seeing this decision through. This will vary naturally a lot around the world and how the response to the pandemic has gone in different regions and different countries. In the US, it seems like a lot of organizations are eyeing these returns after the Labor Day holiday, which is, you know, in early fall, typically when children go back to school. How do you think through the timing of making this change?
One way to think about the timing is, if you've ever been, as probably everyone has, in an airport and your plane's been delayed and it's been delayed twice, you currently have a departure time. You know, you think the plane may take off then, but you're also thinking, well, it could be delayed again. Well, that's kind of what's happening with the return to work. Mm. It's been on the cards for some time. Currently, as of, you know, June, July 2021, it's penciled in for most organizations for Labor Day, you know, September. a lot of companies are getting a few employees back. A few companies, like Goldman Sachs is the most obvious, are trying to get all their employees back. The stages of this, for most companies, the best guess is you start to get 10, 20 people back from July, August onwards to test the systems out, blow the cobwebs off. From September, October, you start to get in large numbers of people, probably ramping up pretty rapidly. And maybe by the end of this year, by Christmas 2021, you're pretty much back to what you think is the long run, probably hybrid. But this is going to be a revolution in the future of work, a change like we've never seen before. And it's going to take some time to play out. Revolutions are not quick. And so I think the whole throughout 2022, probably into 2023, there's going to be endless turbulence. My advice for companies is the exact reverse of the Silicon Valley mantra of go fast and break things. I would, be slow and cautious and boring on working from home, go for hybrid, go for, maybe you decide at the team, go for a 3-2 plan, kind of the very typical vanilla flavor decision. Because sure, there are other things you can do, but it's not clear they'll work. And I'd frankly, wait for other firms to try it out and learn from their mistakes. So I think a lot of firms will, do boring vanilla stuff throughout this year, and it will become clearer what works and what doesn't as we run into 22, 23.
Nick, you study management decisions as an economist, right? You've got these big sweeping views of how these very practical changes at the managerial level affect the economy. What's your advice for a manager or leader anywhere in the world, really, for how to go about keeping workers happy with remote options, but also making sure their business runs well? Like, what's just a good mindset to approach this whole conundrum with?
One other key piece of advice I'll call, the Marissa Mayer story. So to set the scene, Marissa Mayer was the CEO of Yahoo from 2012 until I think maybe 2016, quite a few years actually. And when she took over Yahoo, I know this because I spent about 45 minutes interviewing her, 6 months ago. And it was fascinating. She said, as she was putting in this performance management system, she discovered this whole group of people who worked from home full-time permanently. And when she started to look at what was going on, she pulled up their call logs and discovered a bunch of them had basically never logged in. It was like, they hadn't turned on their computer for over a week. And so she canceled it, and it was in the media. She, got, I think, quite unreasonably a bunch of bad press. But the lesson she said she learned is very relevant to managers now. And she said, look, there's two ways you can evaluate manage people. There's what economists will call input-based management. You can look at what they're doing. Do they seem to be at their desk, working hard, furiously typing away, appearing to be productive? Or you can use output-based management, which is, you manage based on what they do. Do they hit their sales targets? Do they get their reports written? Do they produce new products, etc.? Now, if you're running input-based management, working from home is a nightmare because you can't see what people are doing. Now, firms that are trying to do that have ended up trying to go for that kind of spooky, horrible surveillance software where you're taking screenshots and using cameras to look at employees' faces, etc. It's just awful. So input-based management is kind of okay. I'd never say it was actually particularly good, but it's workable in the office. It is a disaster for working from home. Output-based management, on the other hand, is really, from the get-go, has been best practice in the office. You want to reward people on what they achieve. But it turns out to be really the only workable way to run working from home. So what I've heard from a lot of managers is the pandemic has really accelerated their push to put in place better performance management systems. So better data collection, better 360 reviews, more regular performance appraisals, better tracking and monitoring, etc. Because that turns out to be absolutely essential if you want to have effective working from home.
Nick, this has been so great to hear about your research and thinking about this really big problem. Thanks for coming on the show to talk about it.
Okay, thanks very much for having me on. Great to be here.
That's Nicholas Bloom, professor of economics at Stanford University. He wrote the recent HBR article, "Don't Let Employees Pick Their Work From Home Days." You can find it at hbr.org. This episode was produced by Mary Du. We get technical help from Rob Eckert. Adam Buchholz is our audio product manager. Thanks for listening to the HBR IdeaCast. I'm Kurt Nickisch.